Hello, everybody. I'm Byron Cardiff. I'm going to be your host for this website's window, filling in for Corey, who's busy doing some other stuff. And today we have Richie with us, and he's going to be talking to us about Swagger.
Yeah, sure. Okay. So just to give a little bit of background on what Swagger is, and then there's an open source framework that I built on top of Swagger, which really facilitates Swagger in Web API. So just to give a little bit of background on Swagger for those who don't know, Swagger itself is basically a API description language. So it's specifically for REST HTTP style APIs. So it's a JSON format, and once you can have a web API that emits the Swagger JSON to describe itself, that opens up a whole world of open source tooling that's started to get built on top of Swagger. So just if you want to learn a little bit more about Swagger, there's the website here, swagger.io. One of the really cool tools that kind of builds on top of Swagger is the Swagger UI. And that's really what Swashbuckle basically provide. It auto-generates a Swagger JSON, mm-hmm. and then also bundles in as part of the package a version of the Swagger UI that consumes that Swagger and then provides basically a API documentation and discovery UI.
Right, and the nice thing about this is that you do it all within your web API, right? So you don't have to go to external files or anything like that.
Exactly, and that's one of the kind of philosophies or the reason why I built Swashbuckle was when you're building an API, you want to focus on building an awesome API. Mm-hmm. You definitely want to make that API discoverable, but that shouldn't be the majority of your time shouldn't be spent trying to build a documentation website. So Swashbuckle kind of allows you to focus on the API, and then it tries to auto-generate your documentation website. So similar in a way to the help pages for web API, mm-hmm. but with help pages, it basically installed the whole website, and then you had to kind of maintain it going forward. Whereas Swashbuckle, it's really just a reference to a DLL. It hooks up a couple of endpoints and serves up the UI.
Right.
So like I said, if you want to learn a little bit more about Swagger, the Swagger UI is just one of many really cool tools that you can use once your service can describe itself in Swagger. There's client code generation mm-hmm. Tools that can be used. And I know there's AutoREST.
AutoREST, yeah, exactly.
Which is one that's being used internally here at Microsoft to auto generate clients, C# clients for web APIs that emit Swagger. So, with that, given that background, I really just want, because I think Brady Gaster did one of these before in the past and gave a quick introduction to Swashbuckle. I want to just kind of go through a couple of demos that demonstrate some common scenarios when people are using Swashbuckle with their web API.
Sure.
And then we'll just open up to some questions at the end.
Awesome.
Okay. So I've kind of made four examples here. So the first one is just a basic API, and I've got a controller that does a few actions, CRUD actions on a product. So there's create, get all, get by ID, and you can see there I'm using attribute routing. Mm-hmm. So right now I can spin up this website. I can do a get request through my browser to check out some of the get operations. But other than that, I would need to use Postman or some other tool to test out the web API. Mm-hmm. So just one simple thing you can do if you want to use Swashbuckle is you just simply install the package. So this does a couple of things, and I'll just walk through them. But it tries to really minimize the impact on your actual code base. So it adds a reference to swashbuckle.core, which you should be able to see here. Oh, hang on, I did that for the wrong. Let me just do that again. So it adds a reference to swashbuckle.core, and then the only other thing it adds is this Swagger config file, and this basically gets auto-registered at application startup via Web Activator. Mm-hmm. And what that does is that just calls into this register method, and there's extension methods on the HTTP configuration object that you can use to enable Swagger. Again, just going back to the philosophy, the idea is that Swashbuckle will auto-generate as much as it possibly can and then provide extensibility points to fill in the gaps. And hopefully there's not too many of those gaps, because you don't want to spend a whole lot of time maintaining your documentation website. Right. So I won't go through all of these. I'm just going to show you a couple of the extensibility points, but there's a whole range of them here, and they're documented in this file when you pull it down. But now, once that's installed, I can go and spin up the website again. And hopefully now at the Swagger endpoint, I get a Swagger UI where I can check out my operations. I can even go and try them out.
And just to highlight, you didn't actually touch any of the code in your application. You just installed the NuGet package.
Yeah.
And out of the box, it goes in and does this.
Yeah. And this is what you get out of the box. And this is like really useful. Really useful during the development phase, because you can kind of just do a lot of ad hoc testing.
Right.
But then, at some point when you want to actually deploy your web API, you want to make it discoverable to the outside world, and that's when you might start to look at some of the configuration options with Swashbuckle. You can basically replace this index file and kind of have your own customized branded version. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole range of options, which I'll try and go through a couple of them, but. If you're interested in this, I just recommend probably these things, either read through the README or go through the set of commented out options that are there. There's a whole range, and the goal is that if there's something that you need to do, just a small extensibility point and you'll get it working.
Nice.
So the first one I was just going to show was just if you want to customize the look and feel of the of your index page. So I'll just close off some of these. So this one here, this is a project, Custom Swagger UI. So if you look at the Swagger config file, I've kind of boiled it down to just the interesting points. So the first thing here, I enable Swagger, which is basically the JSON endpoint. And at a minimum, it needs to have a version and a title. And that's really the least amount you need to have to expose the Swagger. Actually, just while I'm talking about that, I will just quickly show you what that looks like. So the UI page loads up here, and this is a customized version, which is not really very nicely customized. Mm-hmm. But I just took out the header, but I can show you how that gets wired up. But just before I do that, let me just show you what the actual Swagger. So that this app, it's essentially a backbone app, and it pulls down the JSON and then builds this UI. But the JSON that it's pulling down is at this endpoint here, which is Swagger Docs v1. And this really is what Swagger is. Swagger is right. this description language in JSON, which basically describes the API.
And all of the other tooling that is built on top of this is basically consuming this raw JSON file and then giving you the nice stuff on top of that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of, I mean, there was WSDL back in the days of SOAP services. One of the huge differences I've noticed with Swagger is, it's a simpler specification, so mm-hmm. it's easier to understand. But because it's really open source from the ground up, there's just so many great tools that are being built around the community. The community's really kind of jumped on it. And so, there's just, a whole range of mature tools that build on top of it.
Yeah, I come from the old school of, doing WSDL WCF services, where you could generate a client very easily. And then moving over to REST, that's kind of like the first pain point that you find, that you don't have this.
Exactly.
You put up your API, but you don't have a client to go hit it with or just to test it, right?
Yeah.
And this kind of like starts to fill in the gap where you have the documentation of your API, and you can have automated, you can even, like if you do some magic in the build, you can have your assemblies generated for a client, and you just build, you have a client that matches your API, and you're ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. And just on that note, there's another tool which is built by the same people who came up with Swagger. It's originally Reverb, it's Smart Bear now have taken over the open source project, but there's a Swagger JS mm-hmm. library, which is actually a dynamic client. So it doesn't generate anything, but it dynamically takes the Swagger and builds basically a JavaScript API just at runtime. So
oh, that's awesome.
It kind of Yeah, so it's just an interesting spin on the same idea. So just real quickly, this kind of customized index one is pretty quick to show. But what'll happen is you can under here where in the enable Swagger UI, it takes a config builder that comes in. And there's a whole range of options again on that you can look at. The one I'm looking at right now is if you want to, rather than pull, so all of the, there's a whole load of web assets that make up that UI, like mm-hmm. JavaScript files, CSS, HTML, and they're all embedded in the swashbuckle DLL. But if you want to override any of them with your own version, mm-hmm. and the typical use case there would be to override index.html, because mm-hmm. That's just one file, and typically you might just add your own header, your own footer, but continue to use all like the Swagger UI library to build out this nice interface here.
Right.
And so here, I'm just overriding the index route here, and this just tells it the route that I want to override. And then the way it works is you specify an assembly that's going to contain the override file, and then also the resource name for that file. So to make it a bit clearer, so I've created this folder here, Swagger UI, and in it I've just dumped my custom version of index.html. And you can see down here, I've just removed a lot of the header and just boiled it down to the simplest possible thing, which is this page here. Mm-hmm. But in a real scenario, you'd be adding nice branding here. So I just add the file here under Swagger UI. I go to the properties and change the build action to be an embedded resource. So now it's going to embed that into your own DLL. Mm. And then when you're configuring the Swagger UI here, you just tell it this file is going to be in this assembly. And here's the name of where to find it. So then that's pretty much all you need to do. I mean, you know, instead of having to fork the project and, you know,
right, to
change one file, you can just override the file, spin it up, and you get your customized version. So that's that one. So then moving on, this is an interesting one. This is a secure API. So what I did here was I basically created, again, the same products controller, but I wired up, and this is built on top of Owen middleware, but in the startup, I wired up, where is it? OAuth. So I have, and I'm just hosting my own really simple authorization server in my application, which takes any username, password, and returns an access token, just to demo it. And then I've also specified that any of the operations that are decorated with authorize will require an OAuth bearer token. So just to show you that, I can spin this up. I've already wired up Swagger here. So here's our, getting ahead of myself. Okay. So now this is the secure API demo. So you can see here, going back to the operations, the get all products, I didn't decorate that with an authorization. Maybe I should have named these files something different. So you can see here, get all products. Maybe that's not an operation that you needs to be protected. So
right.
You can see here, I can just go ahead and call that through my Swagger page and get the responses. But if I try and do it to create a product, and here's another. Just this another nice thing about Swagger. It auto generates a sample JSON request here. Mm-hmm. So by just clicking on this section here, it'll populate the field. So now if I go and make that request, it's telling me that the authorization has been denied. One really nice thing which is built into the Swagger UI and Swagger is support to describe OAuth requirements on your API. Hmm. Now, Swashbuckle can't infer that just from static code constructs, so you need to tell it a little bit more to get this to work.
Okay.
And I can show you what that looks like. So I'll just demo it first and then show you how I wired it up. So this is all built into Swagger UI. If you describe operations through your Swagger JSON, describe which operations require an OAuth token, what it'll do is it'll give you this little icon up here in the top right. Mm. And if I click it, it'll go through the OAuth. This is the implicit flow. So it'll tell me, you know, that the Swag UI is trying to access these resources, and you know, what scopes do I want to grant?
Right.
And so I say authorize, and I've wired up my OAuth server to bring me here. Really simple page, but that will redirect back to here, and you can see the way this has gone blue here. And this is just all built in. Now if I go and make my request,
So at that moment, the browser client is being has the token, you're authenticated.
Exactly.
And you can go and try it out as an authenticated user.
Yeah, yeah. So you can see here, if I make this request, now that I've gone through this process, the Swag UI has gone through the whole OAuth handshake, it's got the token, and now it's going to send it in every request for this operation. And you can see that down here where I've made the request, and you can see here's the bearer token that's being passed in. So that's so I'll just go through. There's a little bit of wire up required to do that, but not a whole lot. So the first thing is you do need to, and before you do this, you probably want to read the Swagger spec and just understand how you describe OAuth operations, because it's not entirely intuitive. Mm-hmm. But really, what you do is you say at the service level, I'm defining an authorization scheme. It's OAuth. Here's the description. This is the flow is implicit. I give it the authorization URL, which is where that login page was.
Right.
And then I tell it which scopes are supported. So that's the first step, and that really just says somewhere in this API there's an OAuth requirement. But the second step is then you have to go into individual operations and say whether or not they actually require OAuth. And so I'm using another swashbuckle extensibility point for doing this, which is called an operation filter. And it's probably it's a very useful extensibility point. What it does, after the Swagger JSON has been generated, mm-hmm. you can wire up as many filters as you want, and they will go through each operation, like post-generation, and you can just modify them in any way you want. So what this one here is, just to open this one up, so I've added this in here in my Swagger folder. This is in the API now. And this is an operation filter. It basically just implements one method, which is called apply, which accepts the operation. And this is basically the Swagger operation. So it's the operation description and a couple of other things that give you additional context. It also gives you the corresponding API description, which comes from the web API metadata layer, which Swashbuckle builds on top of.
Awesome.
So it gives you a whole lot of context around the action. And then allows you to make changes. So what I'm doing here is I'm inspecting the API description. I'm getting all authorize attributes that are on the operation, and I'm taking the roles that are specified in each authorize attribute, and then just assigning operation security requirements. So this is really just as per the Swagger specification. I'm saying this operation has security, and they're specifically OAuth requirements.
Right.
So just by doing that, when the Swashbuckle generator runs, it'll generate the document first, then it'll run any operation filters on any operations in the document. This one here, which we've wired up, will run, and it'll check if the corresponding action has an authorized attribute, and it'll update the Swagger accordingly. It's kind of nice. There's a little bit of work up front, but once it's done, it's kind of, it's done, you know.
So yeah, this is the plumbing for anything that your API is going to be doing.
Exactly,
so you do
yeah.
it probably one time when you're setting it up.
Exactly.
You decide that you're going to be using OAuth for your authentication. You do this, and then you go into the specific APIs that you want to decorate.
Exactly. So if I was to go in here, we talked earlier about the get all one wasn't decorated originally.
Mm-hmm.
If we go in and decorate that, rebuild it, and then fire this up. Now we'll see, first of all, that this should return an authorization error, but because I've described the fact that this operation requires OAuth, the Swagger UI will give me this, and I can go through the whole flow again. So it's kind of like there's a little bit of these extensibility points. The whole idea is not that, you know, you're making a change that's very specific to a specific operation. The idea is really that you use the existing metadata tied with your specific requirements and kind of wire up something that just, once it's done once, it'll just work for all operations.
Yeah, Yeah, it's probably, you know, you're probably going to have a little bit of a learning curve when you're doing it for your first project.
Yeah.
But once you've done it once, this is one of those things that you just copy paste into your next one and you're
exactly, yeah,
ready to
yeah.
go.
And then you know, what started to happen has been, it's been interesting. Swashbook has probably been around for, I think, nearly 3 years at this point. Mm-hmm. And what happens is people in the community create their own operation filters, and it's suddenly it seems like it's doing something very useful that is more is generic, not specific to their use cases. And then typically I'll look at rolling that into the framework so you get it out of the box. So
awesome.
It's kind of a nice way for people to try out, you know, changes and without having to fork the repo, and then if they're getting a lot of success with it, can kind of roll it back into the framework.
And it's a very nice extensibility point.
Yeah. So there's a whole other set. You can part of Swagger, it also describes any models in your API. So I mean, these are just basically descriptions of C# classes, but it uses JSON schema to describe them, and Swashbuckle generates that JSON schema just based off reflection on the types. But there's also like an I schema filter, which is the same idea as an operation, but instead it gets applied to any schema that was generated based on a type. And then there's also a document filter, which is just the whole Swagger document. So essentially you can change anything you want, but at that, if you're operating at the document level, you really would want to understand the Swagger specification as best you can. So that's the, how are we doing for time? I have one more demo if there's time, but.
Yeah, I think we can go for it.
Yeah, okay. So this is a versioned API, and so I will just spin it up first to kind of show you what it currently looks like.
So the scenario here is you have multiple public-facing APIs, and you have versions of it.
Yeah, and so, Web API doesn't really have versioning as a first-class concept, mm-hmm. so it's up to you how you're going to implement it. I think currently the recommended approach is attribute routing. Mm-hmm. What I'm doing here is I'm using a regex constraint because I want to say, you know, this operation here to create a product is supported in version 1 and version 2, mm-hmm. I've used this regex constraint to kind of apply that, but then I've said that this partial update and the delete is v2 only. So if you go into the Swagger config, basically it has an option here. You can either specify that your service is a single API version, mm-hmm. in which case you can specify here, like, again, this is a builder, so it's all kind of a fluent API. You can add additional details like contact, terms of service, and they'll all show up on the UI. Mm-hmm. But you can also specify that's got multiple API versions. And so again, you get the same builder here. So when you want to specify different versions, so you can again specify a description, but you provide basically an array of versions here. And the other thing you have to do is you have to tell Swashbuckle, how does it determine, given an API description, how does mm-hmm. it determine which version it belongs to? Because that's mm-hmm. entirely up to how you've implemented versioning in your API. So this one here, I've wired, it just takes a Lambda here. I've created this one here, resolve version support by route constraint. So it's basically, this is the Lambda that Swashbuckle will call. It'll take an API description. Mm-hmm. It'll say, this is the version I'm creating a Swagger document for. Is this API description part of that? So it expects a Boolean to come back. So the implementation here is, again, I just look at the API description. I get the route constraints that are on it. If it happens to be a regex constraint, I can look at the pattern and split out the versions out of it. If the version, the target version, is contained in there, well then
right.
it'll filter it out. And I don't have time to show that on the UI today, but what that will do is you'll get you can specify, so by default, so when you wire up the multiple version support, this will always be the URL of the Swagger of mm-hmm. If you've provided multiple versions, you could put in 2 there, and it'll give you the other set of
right. So the documentation URL will stay fixed.
Yeah.
And then from there, you can navigate to the different versions.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So the idea being that you can continue to document your APIs, and if you want to provide documentation for older versions, you just provide them there as well.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I think that's all we have for now. You have a page that you wanted to show us for like community engagement type of stuff?
Yeah, so there's two pages. I mean, most of the community is all based around the GitHub repo. There's like a lot of issues there. Not a lot of issues, but that's where most questions come in through. And that's really my kind of go-to point for answering questions and stuff like that. I mean, I tried to keep up with Stack Overflow, but just it's difficult with time and whatnot. So this is kind of the core piece for Swashbuckle. And the other thing that I wanted to mention was that there's currently a beta version for vNext mm-hmm. web API. And that's I'm building that at a kind of a working repo, which is called Ahoy, under the same GitHub alias, so domain-driven dev. And you can check that out. It's actually available on NuGet as beta 6 pre-release. So if you have a vNext web API, you can pull that down. It's almost the same semantics to wire it up, just slightly different. Instead of having the extension methods on HTTP config, mm-hmm. they're on the app builder, which is used in vNext. So yeah, I'm definitely try that out. And if you're having any issues getting it working, just send me a message here on the repo. But yeah, my plan is to kind of have a release, a pre-release of Swashbuckle targeted at shortly after each pre-release of vNext.
Very nice. And we'll include descriptions, links in the description for this, so that people can go and reach them. So I think that's all from us here in the Websites Window. And thank you very much for joining. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.